Edge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham and Scott German. We're going to talk about Virginia, North Carolina. Our hearts have slowed down a bit. It's a good thing. Thomas Watatenside with a three-pointer, 0.8 seconds to go. Virginia wins 64-62. And, Scott, I think we both agree this team's going to kill us. This week is going to kill us. Two wins this week in heart-stopping fashion. Scott, your initial reaction to this game.
We talked Tuesday after the Notre Dame game. They don't do anything easy, and they are who they are. But at the end of the night, they go into a hostile environment in the Dean-Durham. I know Carolina's not having a good season, but that was still a very hostile environment on the road in the ACC, and they find a way to win. And if you look at some of the numbers tonight, some really encouraging signs there tonight, all around. We can talk about it a little bit later, but some individual performances I was really encouraged by.
Yeah, 64 points is one thing to be encouraged by. I'm trying to get, right now Stat Broadcast, and Stat Broadcast is not giving us the number of possessions in the game, so I'll have to get that a little later. But 64 points, Virginia shot 44.4% from the floor, 42.9% from 3, 9 of 21. Now, it helps when you have one guy, Watatenside, going 6 of 10, including the game winner. Also, a great night, I would say, for Casey Morsell. Let's talk about Casey Morsell, Scott. I pointed this out. We got there the other night so early because the game was 9 o'clock on Tuesday night, the Notre Dame game. We got to the arena about 6:15, and I'm doing laps of the concourse of JPJ, and I'm watching the shoot around. And Casey Morsell, we've talked about Casey. His shot's a little flat, and he was intentionally shooting these rainbow arc jumpers for about a good 30 minutes. In that game, he had a good shooting night. Tonight, 4 of 6 from the floor, 10 points. That's nice. Diakite had a big shot down the stretch, 15 points, 6 of 10 shooting. Kia Clark, 10 points, 9 rebounds. Yeah, good nights all around for this for some Virginia guys here. And, I don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth here. This Carolina team a week ago on Saturday night in Chapel Hill had a 13-point lead with 4 minutes to go on Duke, and it took Duke 45 minutes to beat this Carolina team by 2 points. Tonight it only took 40 for Virginia to beat them by two. So it's a well-earned, tough win, and with some big performances by some guys. Scott, are you still there?
I'm sorry, Chris. You can see the confidence. Now, I think it's really, maybe you have to be there, maybe it's difficult watching it on TV, but I just see a little more confidence, a little more just in the way he moves without the ball, the way he looks like he moves to the ball better. He appears to me as though he really does, or he doesn't back off from the shot as much. His shot looks better, and I think that just, just comes from being more comfortable. And we're at the stage of the season now where this is where he should be. He's getting to the point where he's no longer a freshman. However, there's still a lot of first points. I mean, playing in the Dean Durham tonight, that's can be an inundating task in itself. It's still a very hostile environment, regardless of what Carolina's record is. But, yeah, I'm starting to see Casey develop a lot more confidence, and it's starting to pay off. And with Golden Tate State as well. I mean, I've looked at the stats since the Florida State game. He is 30 of 64 from the 3-point line, and you get him off, on track, and get Casey giving us 8 to 10 points a game, and he's still playing. Still can't. Discount. He's still playing lockdown D, Casey. So, things are slowly starting to piece together. If you look at what's happening around the league, this team is not only playing their way back in an NCAA tournament, they're really looking good for that double bye in the ACC tournament.
Yeah, Virginia 9-5 in the ACC now, and a two-game spread right now. I think NC State must play tomorrow night. They're 7-6 in the ACC, but at least as of this moment, a two-game spread over the next next team in the ACC for that number four spot. And now you look at Garrison Brooks, 20 points for North Carolina, 9 of 14 shooting. Cole Anthony at 17, and he shot 7 of 16, but I was watching the stats as the game was going on. I'll break this down a little bit more later I get my deep dive into this game after the game. But he was 6 of 10 at one point in this game. So he went 1 for his last 6 from the floor, and that was one that, you know, one of those shots that bounced around every part of the rim and went in. I think it was 27 seconds to go. They got Carolina back to 1, but good job by Kia Clark defensively on a guy that's a tough guard. Clark, I mentioned, 10 points, 9 assists, 5 turnovers in 37 minutes, but it was Clark's assist. Yeah, that's the part of this play we might not remember. He was actually credited with an assist on the play, the Walter Tensai play. After the 3 free throws by Christian Keeling with 10.3 seconds to go, Clark gets the inbounds pass and dribble penetrates all the way into the lane under the basket, kicks it out to Walter Tensai. Now, Walter Tensai had to pump fake and get the shot off, but Kihei was doing a great job down the stretch getting looks for his guys. And, you know, I don't know if we can say enough about the heart of this guy. I know that he's a guy that, has been a lightning rod for UVA fans for some reason to me. I mean, even last season, he was a key guy last season for this team. He's the point guard of this team this year, obviously. But, he set up a lot of good plays for his teammates down the stretch, and he set up that play there. He won't get the credit because Walter Tensai made the shot, but Kie's dribble penetration is what set up that shot for Walter Tensai.
I'm sitting, watching that play unfold, and I could just see him trying to, go in there and put up the shot that was either going to get blocked or the game end like that. But did you think that was a design play?
Well, it will be interesting to know. I'm sure as we're recording this podcast right now, Tony probably has already talked with reporters after the game. Tony called timeout after the second free throw of the 3 by Christian Keeling, the one that tied it, and then Keeling's third free throw of the 3 gave Carolina the lead. I would be surprised if it felt like a design play. The dribble penetration, the kick out, when you're down 1, you don't need a 3, but also, if you're Carolina, you're not thinking you're going to kick out to Walter Tensai for a shot like that. I'm not sure if the design was for Walter Tensai necessarily to get that look, but I do feel like the design of that play was for Kihei to get dribble penetration in the lane and maybe try to find Diakite maybe sliding down after the defense might crack down on Kihei Clark. Kihei had to make a decision there and kick it out. And so he made a good decision. He found the open guy. But I do feel like there was some design to Kihei getting in a lane there, and then Kihei had to make the decision. He had to make the call. I'd love to know. We'll know by the time we're done with this podcast what Tony says and what Kihei says as to what the play call was. My feeling is I doubt it was designed for Walter Tensai necessarily, but it was designed for Kihei to dribble penetrate and create something off the dribble.
Yeah, and I think it was a design play myself. I think he got into the lane and great pass out to the wing to what was gonna say. We'll find out. Maybe. Not sure they'll divulge that or not, but it was, it was great court awareness by TA, and that's what he's done all season. We got to live with some turnovers. My goodness, you're playing 36, 37 minutes a game. You're going to get some turnovers from time to time, but it was a hard stopper, that's for sure. But I don't think we can talk enough about how much improvement that we've seen from Walter Tensai. He is just really developing into a great scorer. But is it my imagination, or you're a stats guy? Is he shooting something to check on? He just seems to shoot a lot better away from JPJ.
Yeah, but Walter Tensai, let me see if I can bring that up real quick, and I can. I have the UVA.
I'm not basing it on anything. It just hasn't watched him play that as much as we have this season. It just seems like he's just a better shooter away from home than he is at home.
Well, I mean, look at the sample size here. At Wake Forest, 7 of 14 from 3. At Louisville, 7 of 10 from 3. At Chapel Hill, 6 of 10 from 3. The Notre Dame game this week at home, 1 of 8 from 3. The home game against Clemson, 1 of 6 from 3. 2 of 4, modest at home of the Florida State game. Yeah, I think you might have noticed something there, Scott. We might have to ask Thomas about that next time we talk with him. What is it about being on the road? Because and he was confident. He was making shots early and often in this game. So I think that's a great observation. I'm gonna have to write about that tonight. Another credit to Scott German for.
You know, it wasn't anything I saw. It was just my thinking about how the season has unfolded. And just thinking that I haven't seen him in person really go off like we've seen him, you know, on the road and some big games like at Louisville, like in Chapel Hill. So that's interesting. I don't know what the reason could be, but it is. So it seems like it's definitely a fact, a statistic, that he's a better shooter on the road than he is at JTJ.
Yeah, that'll be a question. I'm sure a good one. I'm looking at some numbers here. I was looking on Twitter to see if there was any word on the post game. And I'm looking, Damon Dillman tweets out UVA coaches all time in Chapel Hill. Tony Bennett's 4-3 in Chapel Hill. Everybody else 5 wins, 63 losses. And that's amazing to think because Terry Holland has some good years, but Tony's won 4. And everybody else has won 5. I mean, does that surprise you to hear that, Scott?
Not really. I mean, we had some winning years down at Chapel Hill. Even when we had some really good teams, we couldn't figure out a way to win at UNC. Tony's now 10-7 against Roy.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we've now won 6 straight against Carolina. And this year, yeah. 2 of 6 wins have come against a pretty weak Carolina team, but that wasn't a weak Carolina team that we played last year and won. So, I think slowly but surely we're seeing a changing of the guard in the ACC.
Well, and here's some more numbers for you. Again, as I'm continuing to troll for information on what Tony had to say about that last play, I'm finding some good kernels here. In Tony's first 8 seasons at UVA, Virginia was 30-38 in games decided by 5 points or fewer since 2017, 17-4. This season, 6-2. So, Scott, we have well earned our those last years of the end of our lives coming off, because 6-2 this season in games 5 points or fewer. This is a team we've talked about it, Scott. This is a team that's not necessarily, I mean, it's obviously not the most talented team Tony's had by any measure, but maybe the grittiest team he's ever had.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. They've won some games they've lost some games that are kind of head scratchers at BC, home against State. But, you know, they've won some really grueling, knockdown, block fight type games. And, yeah, it would be hard to say that last year's team was gritty. Maybe not when it got to the ACC or to the NCAA tournament. We all know how that went. But we didn't have a lot of close games. I mean, I don't think many games last year you could call we won by just being gritty. But this year, I think this is the 10th or the 11th single straight, the 7th straight single-digit game we've played in. And, you know, that in itself, it just takes a toll on you as you march through your season. And then we're finding ways to win a lot of those games. You know, we found a way to win Tuesday night against Notre Dame and then here tonight against Carolina. I mean, yeah, gritty is the best adjective to use. This may be the most gritty Virginia basketball team that we've seen, at least as far as basketball under Tony, Lato, Dillon. You have to go back to the Tom Sheehy, ACC, Coach Collin here to find teams that really play, you know, this gritty of basketball.
because nothing's easy for this group. You mentioned all the close games in a row here, and nothing's easy for this group. They're not having any blowout wins. Everything's so tight. I'm going to look at the KenPom numbers, but it's absolutely ridiculous what this Virginia team is doing. I'm trying to see if it's updated, and it's updated now. Virginia's still averaging, even with a couple of recent performances that have been relatively good, still averaging less than a point per possession, 0.987 points per possession on offense. And a team last year that averaged 1.23 points per possession was one of the better teams, the second best team in the country offensively last year in terms of efficiency. And when I say they're averaging 0.987 points per possession, that's by far the worst of any UVA team since this stat came into being. KenPom.com, Ken Pomeroy, a Virginia Tech graduate who's a numbers analyst, who came up with these stats. It dates back to 2002, so we're talking, this is the 19th season that we have this detailed information for, and this is the worst Virginia team of the KenPom.com era. And yes, we've had some great teams in the last few years. We had some real bad teams for a while there, the Pete Gillen era, the Dave Leto era. We had some really bad teams, and this is the worst team before this year was the team that got Dave Leto fired, and they were 1.035 points per possession back in the 2007-2008 season. 2008-2009 season, and this team is that's about 5% off that. 233rd in the country in offensive efficiency. I mean, this is a team. If you're 233rd in the country in offensive efficiency, you should be. Well, just looking at the ACC, that is second worst in the ACC to Boston College. I mean, we're worse than Carolina. We're much worse than Wake. Much worse than Miami. Teams that are 5-10, 4-11, 3-11 in the ACC. This is a team that is willing itself to win without a lot of weapons, and that's just amazing for me to, for any of us to see.
That's why I'm saying, Tony, this is Coach Bennett's best coaching job he's done in his career. If you look at those offensive stats. Offensive efficiency, no way. So we need 9-5 in the ACC right now. 17-7 overall?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just defy any kind of logic. So we, switching gears a little bit, we talked about the good tonight, and that would have to be what we just said, the TA Clark, the improvement of Casey Morsell. Now we got to talk about the bad. And the bad, we get 4 points. Combined points from Braxton Key and Jen Huff. Boy, that was not. If you would have told me before the game that 4 points combined from those two guys and we were going to come away a winner, I would have never believed that. How about you?
Yeah, we're used to seeing that kind of thing from Jay, and I hate to say that. Because Jay can be great Jay, and I'm looking at his I'm pulling up his numbers here. 17 in the win at Georgia Tech, 16 in the loss to Syracuse with the missed free throws. But then and he had 10 in the win over Clemson a couple weeks ago. But then, he had 8 points, but it was all in a minute and 52 seconds against Notre Dame the other night. 2 points tonight in 20 minutes, 4 fouls, and also only 4 rebounds in actually 21 minutes on the official score. And then, so we're used to that with Jay, I guess, to finish that thought. We're used to seeing that with Jay. Jay can either be great Jay or just – it's Mike Toby. This is Mike Toby 2.0, and I hate this because I love Mike Toby too. They're such nice kids to talk with over the years. Mike was such – 7-footers who can shoot threes and also just don't seem to, have their heads in the game from game to game. And then the Key is the one that surprises me. Key tonight, 1-for-5, 2 points, only 24 minutes, and he didn't have foul trouble. Jay at least had the excuse of foul trouble. Jay had 4 fouls. Key didn't have a foul. He got 24 minutes without having foul trouble. He just was ineffective, and we're not used to seeing that out of him. When I bring his stats up for the season, he had 3 the other night, the Notre Dame game. He had the game-winning free throw after airballing one. But, I mean, as recently as the Clemson game, he had 19 points. So, as 4 games ago now, 13 against Florida State. He's had several double-digit games this season. So, and you know, tonight he just looked, when he had the ball on offense, he looked completely out of sorts, like he had no idea what to do. And, you know, you love the kid because he largely played through that wrist injury, the wrist surgery, the broken wrist surgery injury, the wrist guard and everything else. He played through that, but man, he just, it's not that he was missing shots. You don't mind a guy when he's out there, you know, playing hard and missing shots. He just seemed so tentative out there that you wonder if something's in his head right now that you just kind of need to pull out somehow.
Well, you know, before the season, or maybe after last season, I think we talked a little bit about wondering just what type of season Huff would have, what type of season Broxton would have. And now that we're 75% or more through the season, you know, you kind of feel like you know what you got in both players. And I'm just wondering, I just think that those two players are just suited better as being complementary players.
Yeah.
And to ask them to go out there and give you 30, 34, 35 minutes a game is just too much. And having said that, I think that next year, with more offense surrounding Jay Huff, he's going to probably have his best season in his career. Unfortunately, Braxton moves on. But I just wonder if they are just better suited to play the 18, 20 minutes a game than they are when you're out there asking them to give you 30, 35 minutes.
I think it's a great point, you know, because when we were having those discussions, Scott, I remember my thinking, and I'll share it again here just to refresh. With Huff, I think we all thought, man, this guy, he can make threes. He can, you know, he can fly to the rim and dunk it. He can do everything. Now that he's the guy and Jack Salt's not going to be setting picks for 30 minutes in front of him, you know, Jay's going to get 30 minutes a game and he's going to flourish. And what we're seeing is what you just said. He's a better role player. With Braxton Key, I kind of had similar thoughts, you know, because Braxton, you know, UVA fans who are the hardcores will remember, you know, when DeAndre Hunter was recruited to UVA, Braxton Key was also part of that same general recruiting class, and Tony Bennett's staff was after both those guys, and DeAndre basically committed first. But, you know, Tony's staff thought similarly. They thought a little more highly of DeAndre, but they thought similarly of DeAndre and Braxton. And, you know, when DeAndre committed, Braxton decided to go to Alabama first. He played 2 years in Alabama, then transferred to UVA last year. So the thought process, though, was that those guys were pretty close in terms of talent. So, you know, my thinking then going into this year was, okay, so last year Braxton, he made himself a role player for a team that already had established guys. And then now that those established guys, we're talking about DeAndre and Kyle and Ty, we're going to be gone. All right, now Braxton gets to be the star. You know, he's finally here. You know, he was going to be here 4 years ago. He's now finally going to be the star of this team. He's going to step up. And, you know, he's like, I think you said it right, Scott. He's a better role player. He's a guy that can play defense. He can rebound like crazy. He leads his team in rebounding. Only has three tonight, but he over the course of the season leads his team in rebounding. He'll score when needed, but that's not what we thought this time last year. Looking ahead to this year, we thought he could be another. I don't want to say he could have been another DeAndre in the sense that he'd be a number four pick in the first round of the draft, but I thought he would be a 13, 14 point a game guy that could sort of be a leading scorer for you on most nights, and he's just not been that guy. So I think you hit the nail on the head there, Scott. He and Jay both have not emerged in the way that I think we would have thought last year.
We talked during the game about, and this is not a knock on Jay, because he's, you know, I have a daughter. He's the kind of guy that if she brings him home, you know, I'm thrilled just because he is such a nice guy. And does that work to his detriment? Now, there was times up tonight that he was just, it looked like he was just jabbering around with the Carolina players, and I'm thinking, come on, you know, you gotta hate these guys. You can't be out there kidding around with them. I mean, do you think it's just, he's just too nice of a guy? He just doesn't have that DNA, in his DNA, to be out there and to be, you know, some bad dude that's gonna just, crush you if he has a chance. I just don't think that, I don't think he's got that chemical makeup in.
And I think that's what's missing. And it was the same for Mike Toby. I mean, Mike Toby had a – there was one game Mike Toby had. It may have been the Louisville game his last year, his regular season his last year, where he had like 15 points and 20 rebounds. And we said, man, where was that guy for 4 years? You know, for our listeners out there, Scott and I will often kind of joke amongst ourselves. Somebody needs to go up and just – kind of punch Jay in the nose right before the game starts and kind of make him angry. And if they could do that and actually get anger out of Jay Huff, maybe he'd be the guy, because his skill set, again, his three-point shooting, I mean, everything that you look at him, you say, that guy's an NBA player. And then he gets out on the floor and he kind of just floats around. I mean, you know, there are occasionally, once every few games, he'll be that NBA guy, and for the rest of it, he's a guy who floats around, and it's frustrating to see that. But then, and then you got a guy, you know, talk about Keay Clark, smallest guy on the floor, 5'9", 150, and he's out there flinging himself on the floor, that three-point play, the and one he made back in the first half of the game tonight. You know, he's doing everything he can at 5'9", 150. You know, if you could somehow, if he could teach, you know, and it's hard to teach, you know, it's teaching want to, but if he could teach Jay the want to that Kihei has, boy, Jay would be an NBA All-Star in a couple of years. So, but Kihei, though, has it. And that's why Kihei is a guy that had his best college offer before UVA was UC Davis. He's got a championship ring, and he's the point guard on his team this year.
So I'm going to ask you a question. In your opinion, are you having as much fun watching this team play this year as you did last year?
It's hard to say, because in a way, somebody asked me this the other day. The championship from last year makes this year easier. If the team last year had lost in the championship game or lost in the Final Four, had lost along the way last year somewhere, and then this year's team was playing, it would remind me of the 2016-2017 season, because if we're still chasing a banner, that would be it would feel different. But with the banner hanging up there, this team, because it is challenged as it is from a talent standpoint, and I don't want to even say that, because it's not – Roy Williams said about his team, least talented team he's ever coached. It's one thing if you think that. It's another thing if you think it and you tell your assistant coaches that. Don't tell the media that. That's selling those guys short. They're out there busting their asses off, not getting paid to do this stuff. And you, Roy Williams, are cashing big checks to coach these guys. Coach them. Make them better. You're responsible for them. Kind of similar with Tony. Now, with Tony, he's figured some things out here. There's a lot of talent on his team. It's just not the kind of talent that is complementary, maybe. You know, these guys hadn't played together a lot before this year. You know, you're asking Keay Clark and Mamadi Diakite, who were role players last year. Braxton Key, a role player last year. Jay Huff, barely a role player last year. You're asking them to be the stars of the team. Thomas Wotentensein was a JUCO player last year. Casey Morcell was a high school player last year. I'm looking down the list here. Francisco Cafaro and Cody Statman were one was a red shirt and one played a few minutes in garbage time last year. You know, and so there's talent, but and it's not what we were used to as UVA fans. And so to see it come together the way it has been – it's fun to see. I mean, I feel myself rooting for these guys as much as I was rooting for those guys last year, but in a different way, because last year's guys, you really wanted to see. Man, I wanted as much – just like the 2016 group. I felt so bad after the loss to Syracuse that Malcolm and Anthony Gill and Mike Toby didn't get to win a championship, because I felt like they had worked hard enough to win one. And so last year's group, you wanted to see them win a championship. The ceiling for this year's group is not championship. But seeing Wotentensein make that shot tonight, I was as excited as I was okay, maybe not as excited as I was when Diakite hit the shot to tie it to go, you know, to help us go to the Final Four. But it was close, because this win for this team tonight, that's a big win. And so, yeah, I think there is in some ways as much fun this year as there was last year. It's different because last year we were chasing a championship. This year we're not. I don't think we're chasing a championship, but I think we're seeing this team reach its full potential, just like we saw last year's team reach its full potential.
Okay, so you asked me that same question.
All right, so Scott, is this as fun as last year's? No. Okay, go ahead.
No, not if you just, you know, unless you really don't give a crap about your heart or your blood pressure. I had the most fun ever last year watching the Sterling kick team's ass night after night through excellent shooting, pinpoint execution. That was fun. This is fun only after the game that we win. It'll make you old in a hurry, but it is satisfying because I think what you're seeing is that these guys, these players are just, you know, such truly high character players. And you alluded to what Roy, you know, how Roy threw his team under the bus earlier in the season when he basically called them a bunch of, you know, talentless players. You're seeing the cream rise to the crop. We knew what we had in Coach Bennett. He's getting the most out of these guys, and their test has never been, any higher than what we're seeing this year. Win or lose, this is a program that you're proud to call your own, you know?
I would say I'm looking at these two rosters right now because I'm still looking at the stats of this game, and now that I'm starting to think from a recruiting standpoint, when they have Cole Anthony, Armando Bacow, Garrison Brooks, Leaky Black, and Christian Keeling on the floor, they've got an advantage from a recruiting standpoint at maybe at least four positions, maybe five positions over Tony. So when Roy Williams said his team was his least talented team he's ever had, he's still got more talent. And I'm not casting any aspersions on our guys. But we, you know, when he has those five guys on the floor, one of those guys, Cole Anthony, is going to leave school after this year and he's going to be a top 10 pick in the first round of the draft. We ain't got anybody that's going to be anywhere in the draft next year or probably anytime in the future. I love Mamadou Diakite, but I don't think he's helped himself this year. I don't think he's a second round draft pick, much less a first round draft pick. Brooks might be a second round draft pick. Bacow is a freshman, but he'll be a draft pick eventually. And so Roy wants to say he has his least talented team. He has more talent than Tony's got, and Roy's team's 10-15, and Tony's team is 17-7. Roy's team's 3-11 in the ACC. Tony's team's 9-5 in the ACC. And so that speaks to Tony. It speaks to Jason Williford. It speaks to all the guys on the sidelines with Tony in suits, and it speaks to those kids. And so. Yeah, it's not the same. I always talk about how I've got this big bag of confetti sitting next to me from the floor last year. It's sitting right behind me here. And my shoes I was wearing that touched the floor, I don't wear anymore because, my God, I don't want to have anything happen to those shoes because they touched the floor of the championship game. But so nothing will ever replace that. But I admire the hell out of what these kids are doing this year because they should be 10-15, 3-11 in the ACC. And right now, they're 17-7, 9-5. And if they keep playing the way they're playing, as ugly as it is, as much as it kills all of us listening to this podcast right now to watch them play the way they are, they might play on a second weekend in the NCAA tournament. And they don't deserve to be anywhere near there, but they're working their asses off to get there.
Well, you say they don't deserve it. I guess that's just based on the statistical data that we're looking at here, you know, being one of the worst offensive teams in the country. But but you know, they challenge every possession. They play to the end. You know, you take the Purdue game out of it. Every game's been close. I'm not going to say there's a ceiling to this team because I'm watching other teams play. I watched Louisville today down in Clemson, and they're not playing in Death. They may be playing in Death Valley, but they're playing in Tiger Stadium. They're playing a Davos Sweden team. They're playing a team that's probably going to be looking for a coach next season, and they were just awful. Gonzaga is playing a game tonight. If you're watching it, I think it's on the same network that the video is on ESPN3, they're playing a game tonight in a high school gym. What looks like a high school gym, and that's a conference game. So, you know, when the NCAA tournament gets here, our guys are going to be great, and, you know, you don't have to win six games on that first day of the tournament. You got to win two games for 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
And, you know, anything can happen.
We know as well as anybody now, and you know, and I think that too, Scott. I think about until you've seen 1-1 the way we have, and of course our guys have played that way, and Tony and his staff have 1-1. As a fan base, we now know what it takes, and so maybe we're more relaxed as a result. The college basketball landscape this year is not as tough as it was last year. My God, last year, I still say this, we won the championship, but that Duke team was the best collection of talent I've ever seen in college basketball. They didn't even get to the Final Four. That's how good last year was in college basketball. That Duke group didn't even get to the Final Four. There were some damn good teams last year. There's nothing like that this year. So I still think that this Virginia team can get better. If Thomas Woldentensai can start shooting at JPJ the way he shoots in other gyms. Of course, when you get to March, you're always in other gyms. You're in Greensboro, then you're wherever you are after that. But if you can get – you don't need to have him shoot 6 of 10 every night. But if he can shoot 40 to 45% from 3, give you double digits, make teams respect him. If Diakite can give you what he gave you tonight, if Kia Clark can give you what he gave you tonight, if we can get Braxton, we won this game without Braxton and Jay Huff giving us anything. This team can still get a lot better, and they're 9-5 in the ACC and 17-7 overall. I'm not gonna sleep on this team this year. I mean, as much as I've been, I'm not gonna sleep on this team this year. This team has a chance to do something interesting.
Yeah, that was the point I was making. I don't think you can establish the ceiling with this team. The way they're playing now, they're starting to really figure out things. The dots are starting to connect. Marcel's starting to shoot a little bit better, a little more confident. And you know, Braxton, hopefully he's not going to continue in this slump. If he is, he needs to get his girlfriend in the gym again. Yeah. Maybe have an all-night shoot around. You've got some home games coming up. I mean, tremendous revenge opportunity against BC this coming week. You don't want to count wins before you play the game, but there's nothing, you know, after Wednesday night, this team could get their 10th win in the conference, get their 10th conference win of the season. So, I don't think there is a feeling. I don't want to establish a feeling by saying, oh, they could easily get to the second week of the NCAA tournament. Well, you know, they could go farther than that. It just depends on how, you know, matchups and again, staying healthy, too.
Well, for our listeners out there, we'll wrap up the podcast here. We thank you for listening to us. And also, Scott and I, because we're not going to be able to sleep, because after a Virginia win like this, it's hard to get back to sleep. I'm sure Scott's working on a column. I've got some columns coming out. I've done my post-game recap, but I've got insider numbers, likes, dislikes. I've got more things coming, and Scott's got something coming. We'll get you all knowledgeable about this. And I'll tell you what, it's Saturday night. Sunday's going to be a good day now because Virginia got the win tonight in Chapel Hill. 64-62 is the final. And it's good to be talking about a Virginia win in Chapel. Anytime you can do that, it's a good time. So for Scott German, I'm Chris Graham. We'll sign off. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and have a great night and a great weekend.